for the...
Yeah, no, I forget the... Well, I don't remember what I told you, Court. I told you a lot of stuff zigzagged around here and there. I don't remember just what we did.
We talked last time. If you would start out by saying your name, then I'll get a level on it.
Okay. I'm Floyd Fuller.
Good. Last time we talked quite a bit about your father and how he learned about horses and learning to take care of them.
Did I tell you about his being a veterinary, how he... Yeah, I probably told you that.
Yeah, and I was very interested in that.
Yeah,
because, he really had a reputation.
Oh, yes, yes.
Throughout Warren
and,
as a horseman.
And not only that, there was a veterinarian, he never went to college, he picked it up himself, I guess. I think I recall I told
yes.
you that
yeah.
he used to go and see the animals when they were sick or something and see how they acted, then open them up afterwards if they didn't mind, and that's the way he made up all of his own remedies, yeah. And, of course, the horse training, he took that up on his own of being able to train horses to do all the tricks and stuff like that. Just, I don't know where he got it, but just experience and that like it. And I guess I told you about he made a stiff crupper for a horse.
Oh, right, yes, for the tail.
Yeah. Oh, and I can see we told you about the all the mill stuff in the window.
Well, we talked, you started going through the mills, and I'm interested, didn't your brother Earl drive through Granville Woods one year with logs for your teaming, I guess?
Well, he worked at different things. I don't remember just what he did, but one time he was used to drive the mail route from Warren to Roxbury there mm-hmm. at one time, and he did different things with that, and it's possible, I guess, because I was many years younger, the International Paper Company was logging up in Granville Woods, and there was quite a lot of logs hauled down to Granville, and a lot of logs went to the bowl mill in Granville. It would be a bowl mill there. And, well, I guess they still turn out a few now, I don't know. And another thing probably you've heard about it, that later when the International Paper Company got really going big, they had a log hauler train, like?
I did hear that, yeah.
Did you ever report on that, or?
Well, tell me a little bit about it.
Well, it was a steam engine, and on legs, like a railroad engine, and the road from up in Granville Woods, they had the road up into the woods while the men were cutting these logs, and they used to cut the trees whole length, and then they had these big sleds, and they used to put on 5,000 feet or more of logs on a sled, and then have like a train, two, three of those sleds hit to that one, what they call a log hauler, and then that road down through Granville Woods, down through the Gulf, the hills was kind of, some of them were kind of steep, and there's a hill had been for years and years called Hay Hill, and they used to had a man with a little shanty in the wintertime stay there, and when they were going to come down with a load of logs, he'd go and spread hay along there so that the sleds wouldn't push it so fast that they couldn't control it. Then after they went down through, he had to rake that hay all down the track and put it to one side so they could come back up to it, and they took all those monstrous loads of logs down to Granville and piled them, and in the spring they were cut up into log lengths and put it into the river and floated down through the Bellis Falls. And you have to float them in the river. They called them a log drive.
And the river there is that?
That's a branch of White River.
That's the branch of the White River.
Yeah.
And as I understand it, the Mad River and the White River rise just a few...
The Mad River and the White River up in Granville Woods Yes, in the town of Granville. They're, well, they're little springs. They start from springs up on the mountain. And they, in fact, years and years ago, in deer hunting, not like I've been up there. And they're probably, they might be 30, 40 feet apart. And it starts from a little spring and it can flow down. One of them goes north, which is Mad River, and the other one goes south, goes down through the Gulf, and is a branch of White River. And so that's why they get their water. But I don't know, they used to have a lot of, well, weather was different. And you know, it was quite interesting. My folks had pictures of that old big log hauler with loads of logs on it. And the big load they went down to there. And in the spring, to see those men, you know, get them logs and put them into the river when the ice went out. And they had spike shoes on and their poles. And they'd ride down through standing on those logs. And if a log got off to block anything, they straightened it up and ride those logs from Granville Kerr down to the White River, Kerr down to the Bellis Falls.
Now, where was Codfish Corners?
That's right in Granville. That's Upper Granville. There's two Granvilles. There's a lower Granville and Upper Granville. Upper Granville was Codfish Corners. And that's where the bowl mill was. And of course, the Rices owned it for many, many years. And of course, now there in Granville, they've got a novelty place where they make a lot of wooden things. That you've been to that place probably, I guess they got more than 1,000 things. They've got a little mill, they make a lot of stuff right there. But that was the extent of the mill. And of course, down also in Granville, they used to saw out shingles. And Dad, when he built his barn in 1913, he hauled a shingle for that big barn with horses from Granville. Bought them down there and brought them up with two horses up there for all the shingle it took for the big barn.
Now, did he have a barn raising for that?
Yeah. July 4th, 1913. The neighbors all came in. And they set up tables on the piazza with the whole length of the south held across the end. And all the neighbors come in, and Mother had some extra help. And I know she made 26 pies for that dinner. And they came, and all that lumber was piled. The carpenter was Walter Hubbard from South Florida, the wonderful carpenter builder. And he came there the 1st of May. And the other carpenters came there too, and they went to framing the timbers, all 8x8 timbers. And then they put them in piles and had them marked. So when they got ready for raising, every timber that went in the place was marked. So the people would come and help them go out and get one of them timbers and bring it around, and the men would push it up with pike poles and so on, push it, raise it up ropes, pull it up into place and put it together and put the pins in it. And they started it the 1st of May, and the 4th of July they had to raise it. But they didn't get it all up that day, because when they way up to the top part of the big barn, which was 44 by 100, three floors, the purline, they call them purline plates. That's a plate, it goes, it's a hip roof, or half hip, whatever you want to call it. But the upper plates, where the top part of the roof from the ridge down the first joint, where the timber went through, and it's called a purline, I don't know what got a name, purline plate. And that was up pretty high. And so Friday, the next day after the 4th, there was a few of the neighbors, farmers, that could climb way up top and weren't dizzy. Came back and they finished putting raising that top part with just a few men on the second day. But the main part was all went up the day before.
How many men?
Oh, gosh, it must have been, I would say probably 25, 30 men. All the neighbors come in, you know, and each one had helped to do everything. And
What time would you start?
Well, they started in the morning about 8 o'clock. And when night come, they had the whole framework up except the purlined plate. The first floor, the basement, was all put up before they had the raisins. They had put the carpenters put that up because they could handle it down low. And then they went from there up with the raisin. And they did take pictures. I wish you could have pictures of that.
I was going to ask you, what happened to the photographs?
Never had any.
Oh, you never had
no,
any?
No, nobody. Back then, they didn't take hardly any pictures for some reason. It was just one of those things.
Yeah.
So it was interesting.
And how late did they work?
Well, they stayed around 5 o'clock. And then, of course, a lot of the farmers had to go home and do the chores. But they got that up to the purlined plates. And then Dad asked some of the certain ones that didn't mind walking on 8x8 timbers way up in the top of the barn. They'd come back, and they were glad to come back and finish it up. But you know, you've got to be pretty level-headed when you're up, we'll say, 40 feet in the air, walking on an 8x8 timber, nothing on you.
Who was good at that?
Well, it was my brother, Dick Lord. He could climb like nobody, but it didn't bother him, and the boss carpenter there. And then there was an Estee. Well, I can't think of his first name now. I forgot the Estee boy. And, oh gosh, I can't remember the names of several of them. I think it was one of the fellows, the name was one of John Mobus's boys. There were four or five men that could climb and they weren't dizzy. But it's quite a project.
I would say.
And, you know, this is something that was scary, but lucky. One day, the first day, they was pulling timbers up, got up into toward the top part. And my brother was up there with the boss, and they was pulling on this rope. And the one down below, somebody didn't wrap that rope around the timber correctly, and it let go. And my brother, thanks for Walter Hubbard. I'm standing on 8x8 timbers right behind him. And when that rope let go, of course, my brother kind of lost his balance and went backward. If it hadn't been for Mr. Hubbard, he'd have gone. But he was there, and he, big strapping fellow, and he caught him in his arms and saved him. And then they got a little talking to down below about being sure they wrap that timber. They had what they call a timber hitch, a wrap pointing around the timber to pull it up by so it to take it off quickly when you get it there, see. But somebody didn't wrap it right, the rope gave away, come undone, and he'd have lost his life if it hadn't been for Walter Hubbard.
Now, in a barn like that, did your father tell the carpenter what he wanted, and the carpenter sort of figured out the length?
Yeah, the Walter Hubbard came up in the middle of winter. My dad knew him anyway, because he built a beautiful house down in South Rawlins, which is, I don't know when it was built, but it's still standing as perfect as it ever was right down in South Rawlins on the main road, down Jet Road, South Rawlins on the left, a big square, kind of square house. And so he came up and sat down, and Dad knew what he wanted, and he drew up the blueprint and the plans. And made, and then he told, wrote out and told Dad how many timbers he needed to of such a length, and was all about it, what he needed. And then they, from that, they went into the woods, went to cutting the timbers and taking them to the mill and having them sawed the way they wanted them.
Now, in those days, in 1913, how much did a barn like that cost today?
Well, the carpenters, the regular carpenters, got a dollar and a half a day and a dinner. They work 6 days a week. Ain't that something?
That is something.
And they come up there, and of course, making the mortise, and then like they had to use the board machine to bore the, to cut out the, for the mortise and the timber, to bore the hole, set it on the timber, and the man sits on there and turns the crank, and them augers bore down in, and they take chisels and chisel out the mortise, and then another one makes the tenants to fit in. And but they get, those carpenters got $1.50 a day in their dinners. And the boss carpenter stayed right there, boarded right there. And he got $15 a week in his board room. And he looked after everything. He was a wonderful man. And besides, he was quite a musician.
Oh, Walter Hubbard was?
Yep. And also, I've got somewheres, I don't know where, but I've got it put away, but it's been so many years, a piece of poetry. I should have looked it up, but I didn't. I don't know, I didn't know what it is, but well, somewhere so old years. But he made up a piece of poetry that I can recite a little of it. As he started out, that poetry was, last spring when I came to build he Fuller's barn, I came with great elation, expecting when we had it raised we'd have a big celebration. And when, and there's some in between, then it says, when we started, when Ledger started the wall, that's the stone wall foundation, he says, I figured we would be, would be fall or something before we had relations or something like that, and he went on and told about it. But then he says, on raising day, he said, we all got awfully full, but Ledger was fuller. And it was quite a piece of poetry he wrote.
Gosh, I'd be interested in seeing that.
I've got it here somewhere. Don't ask me why, but I've got it. I know I have, because I've saved a lot of those old clippings.
Well, I'd be very interested at some other point.
And another thing, he was a violin player. And while he was there, of course, I was a young fella, only 12 years old, and evening, a lot of times, he'd get his violin out and play, and of course Dad didn't play much with him, because a lot of times in the evening till got, well, Dad would work on that stone wall till dark to get it ready for to put the building up for 4th of July, see. And but he did play with him a little. Of course, as I told you, Dad didn't know music, but he played by ear. But I learned from watching Mr. Hubbard play, I learned 2 or 3 pieces of music that I played for years since then, but just hearing him, watching him, and I don't have any music part, but I got it in my head.
I'll be darned.
And one of them was Gates Ajar Waltz. So I used to play that. Gates Ajar Waltz.
Uh-huh.
And by the way, I'd like to show you my violin.
Can you play that now?
Well, no, not much. My fingers are... I'll get it in the other room. I had it here a while ago. Like I told you, when my dad gave it to me, I was in bed, sick of bed, and I put it away, and his cover came down, and that.
There's the chip. Yeah. Isn't that lovely. Whew. That is beautiful.
That's about 80 years old. I think I was 10 years old when Dad gave it to me.
Gosh, that's... do you still play?
Oh, not very much. Once in a while I play a piece when my grandchildren come from Pennsylvania or something.
Oh, that's nice.
But when I was a kid, my brother took lessons. Then I was so small that my arm didn't have any bend in it.
Yeah, it's amazing. Huh.
So that's what I used to play for the kitchen junkets.
Yeah.
And got my little pin money.
So, Mr. Hubbard actually taught you,
From watching or hearing him play those pieces, I used to get my violin out and play with him. And he had this Gates Ajar Waltz. And so I liked it too, and so I used to, as he played there, I got mine out and I watched him fingering and that, like, and I picked up, so I got so I could play it. I never had any music for it. He didn't have any music for it at all. He played by music, but he had a lot of pieces he played just from his ear, you know, and so. And it was, so that waltz was a nice waltz. I used to play it for dances, and they had two or three other pieces. I don't know the name of them now, but he used to play. So he was quite a fella.
Now, is he any relation to the Hubbard down in Rochester?
No, altogether different. I don't know just why he did come in from, but he always lived, for as far as I know, for many, many years in South Royalton.
Well, now, the barn he built, it was a huge barn.
44 wide and 100 feet long. Did I show you pictures of it?
No.
Oh, well, let me get you. That's one of the things I wonder what should have brought me in. I got some good pictures, didn't I?
Oh, great.
Care a few pictures in the car to show people, and so and also the wall.
Oh yeah.
Let me get the right page in a minute. That so many people marveled over the wall laid in 1913 and still standing there.
Now, how did your father know how to be a stonemason?
Don't ask me. I'd if I could sit up here.
Yeah, sure can.
Yeah.
Or would you rather sit in your chair? We can hear it on the machine.
See this part of the barn over here?
Mm-hmm.
He built that in 1898.
Oh, okay.
And then they had another old kill barn. And then in 1913, he tore that down. And he built, this is 44 wide, and go down this way 100 feet.
Shh.
And it was 50 feet from the peak here down to the ground.
Whew.
And that is a...
Oh, that's a load of hay.
That's down on my farm. Now back here, we'll look at that later.
Oh, the stone wall?
Here's the wall. That my father lay there. Look at that.
Wow.
This went out towards the front of the barn.
Uh-huh.
But from here out 52 feet was a part laid in 1898. And then in 1913 he went on 44 feet more out through there. And that wall, every stone today is just as tight as it was the day it was laid in there. Which is unbelievable to everybody.
That is something.
That is the old house, the way it was.
Who's this?
Well, that's me. I don't remember who was sitting with me. But you'll see over here the first picture. That's the way the house looked when Dad, before I was born.
Oh, look at this. Now, is this your father?
Yeah. And that's my mother, and Earl and Lauren.
Uh-huh. Oh, that's wonderful.
And look at the house, and then you'll see how it looked. Next page is where he
built a porch.
That looked like a home.
Yeah.
And this is what the house looks like now, and it makes me cry when I look there.
Oh.
Don't that look idiot for?
Yeah. Oh.
They took the piazza off, and oh, it was a mess. But the man that owns it owns just 10 acres. He don't live there. He's from New York. And he got about 10 acres, but he rents the house. But that wall, he thinks so much of it. First time I met him here 3-4 years ago, he says, Mr. Fuller, he says, that's a piece of art. He says, the man that laid that in all these years, he says, to have it stand like that, there's some pictures in between. That's me and my daughter. And to see some of the...
Oh, they're huge.
He says, I've got it recorded in the town record in Warren. And never a lot of stone that ever be removed or touched as long as wood grows and water runs.
Oh.
So that's going to stay there. And you know, the funny part of it is, it ain't funny, the foundation, that's a, Dad said to have a wall stand, you've got to have a foundation to put the wall on. So he dug out a ditch with a horses and a scraper down into the ground about 3 foot deep. A wide ditch, and then he hauled in stone. There's stones under that wall that you can't see. It was so big it took a pair of horses and a yoke of oxen to pull one stone on a boat.
Wow.
And that a place into that wall underneath the foundation. And then instead of being dirt right up back of it, he said, if you have dirt up back of it, the frost will heave it and push it out. That's why it sounds good. So in years before that, when he dug a lot of stones out, that's me in the 4th of July parade, Ben Hur.
And it is, this is your...
This is Dad's old view up back of the old house, the barn.
Gosh, this is a wonderful photograph, too.
And
this is the barn that with the barn raising.
Yeah. And you know, it was funny, he used to plow and raise corn, and then he'd seed it down. And we had the ground, we boy did with a cattle, a yoke of oxen, and a tip.
I should move this.
No, oh, I can go in and talk to you. I don't need to sit there. He used to, when he seeded down a piece, the oats and the grass, after to get it seeded, we boys had to take a 6-time manure fork and the oxen with a tip cart and go all over that seeded piece and pick up every little stone that we could pick up on that fork and haul it out and dump them in a pile on the pasture. So I had the nice job that summer to build in the barn as he was laying wall to go out there with the oxen and the cart and pick up a lot of them little stones and bring them in, and it's like a stone wall, building a wall here. Instead of putting dirt up against on the backside, he put about, 3 foot, nearly 3 foot wide in back of the stone was those little stones.
Uh-huh.
And those little stones, you see, watered and moisture can work down through them. If the dirt would hold it and it'd freeze and then it'd push the wall in. Like you see so many old stone walls that were built, must have been a good timeline, but they pushed and caved in. And so all in back of that wall out there, it all filled in with little stones till he got almost within about a foot of the top of it, and then he filled in with dirt. And that's why that wall stands like it does today.
It is a spectacular, and you don't have any idea where he learned. He had to have learned from somebody.
No, just his own pickup.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That man, he didn't... The people didn't teach him much. I don't know how he got his knowledge, but he did.
Huh.
And you know, when he sold the farm to my brother, Lorne, he came down to Rochester where I was living in 1930. And in the Rochester village, the hall then was called Pierce Memorial Hall, and right side of it was a church. Well, the town at that time, we had 3 churches there, and so they decided to put that church into a library, which it is now. And I don't know if you're familiar with Rochester Village or not, but that library is right next to that Pierce Hall.
Mm-hmm.
So they were I don't know who did it, but they wanted somebody to lay a stone wall, a little wall, about a foot high or so, from the corner of the church on a circle out around by the driveway that went into Pierce Hall and out in front of the street, frontage. Then they were going to fill it in and have better grass growing on it and that like. Well, they talked to 2 or 3 different people about doing it, and everybody said, well, a little wall of cat, they didn't want big stones, they wanted small stones. It couldn't be done unless you cemented it. Well, I was working at the time for Walter Severy, which was a selectman and road commissioner. And I worked for him 7 years on the road doing road work. And so he'd heard me tell about what my dad did. And so he went up and talked to my dad. And the dad said, well, I'm too old, he said, to lay walls now. Well, he says, if you just oversee it, you wouldn't have to put your hands on the stone. Just tell people what to do. So he took Dad down there and showed him what they want to do. And Dad said, well, he said, I'll tell you, he says, in the first place, I'll do it. He said, I'd like to do it long term. He hadn't been there right so long. And see, he was about 80 years old. And he says, you've got to do things I want to. Well, we do anything you want. Well, he says, you've got to go out by hand and dig a ditch down in the ground for foundation. So we had him dig a ditch, I don't remember how deep, but quite a little way down, and they filled it with good stones and hires underneath, you never see them. And then he built that little wall, and they filled it in back with dirt, and it was built on a curve, and then a drop of cement used, and that was in 1930. And that little wall is just as perfect today as it was then.
Well, this wall here is, I've seen it actually, I've driven by the old place.
Have you?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So I've seen the wall, and it is something else. Now, I didn't realize it was your father. I thought it was your grandfather.
No, Dad. See, when Dad bought that old place, like the old house, in 1882, they were just that old house, and just one little old barn, a few cows, and that like, and... So that's what he did. And then, of course, I showed you the house that went up to Montpelier.
Yes.
Yeah.
Now, are these photographs, are they taken from negatives, or are these the originals?
No, those are taken just two or three years ago. As I take friends of mine over there to see the old place, some of the people come, you know, and I'd like, they're so interested, and I take them over there, and then we just our cameras take the pictures.
Yeah, but no, this one of the original house. Is that an original photograph?
My niece got a Ruth got a somehow when she was making up the.